From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Keeping democracy strong by doing our part for truth-telling. That would be what we're about, folks. This is The Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Northeast Public Radio,
nicely put, Rex.
Thank you. Thank you. Very good. Oh, boy. And we have Ira Fussfeld, a longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Hello. Happy New Year, all.
Wonderful to see you. And Barbara Lombardo, a longtime editor of the Saratogian and also then executive editor of the Troy Record and now teaching at UAlbany. How are you, Barbara?
I'm great. Happy 2019.
Oh, that's a great thing, isn't it, to be here in 2019? What could possibly go wrong? By the way, you have to note that Donald Trump ended 2018 the way that he started it, with a Fox News interview. And according to CNN, which actually is counting, it was the president's 41st interview since inauguration with Fox News.
Amazing. Nope. Some people think, you're expert, that what's going on here is that Fox News is really the president. And we know that he was ready to end the walkout. The Senate voted, the House voted, everybody was ready to do that. And he was going to sign it. And then he looked at Rush Limbaugh and some of the other commentators there. And he
Jeannie Pirro on Fox. Yeah. And
he changed his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the question is, do we have state-run media or do we have media-run state?
Exactly. And that is a great question. Fox News.
Well, let me
News
ask you, since you raised the last interview, for all of the raps well-earned that Trump is absorbing, has he not been more visible and accessible than many of his predecessors? Granted, much of the time on Fox News, but all of the driveway interviews, the questions that he takes, as he did yesterday as we speak at the cabinet meeting, he certainly doesn't do it the traditional way. He doesn't have the traditional news conferences. The daily press briefings have become a thing of the past. But has he become more accessible than other presidents?
Well, that kind of access is true. He does that kind of stuff. He appears shouting over the din of the chopper blades. But, you know, the value of a press conference is that the president actually articulates policy. It's good for the government bureaucracy to hear what the president's policy is. In this case, the president doesn't do that. And the loss of the daily briefing means that reporters are left to then go find the sources. And this administration leaks like a sieve. So they get all the sources instead of getting the stuff from the White House they would otherwise have had.
Well, you know, I'm very interested in Ira's question on this, because I think in order to understand what's really going on, you have to look at the psychodynamics of the president. Now, I'm not a PhD in psychology, obviously, in political science, but I think there have been enough articles written about the psychopathology of this particular president and how off the rails he is. And one of the things about a megalomaniacal person or somebody who thinks that they're always right, they have no problem, Ira, saying anything that they think they could say because they're not worried about the consequences. They think they're right.
Well, it was certainly evident in that cabinet room session where he goes off and expounds on things such as the Russia-Afghanistan interaction. And by most historians' accounts, he was not even close to the truth.
He lies.
So he's up there expounding on it as if he is this full professor with the most expert view. And to your point, is this simply because he believes he is right?
Without question.
Or is it more psychologically rooted?
Well, it's both.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly he thinks he's right, and I think that is psychologically rooted. It's megalomaniacal, but it's also a great belief in his own efficacy. Yeah, I mean,
well, he could have been a great general. I don't know.
I was just going to say that. You are so right.
It is frightening, and the first temptation to laugh at his craziness. I try to temper that because it is scary to have a president who is so out of touch with reality.
Somebody must have been warning him about that because he did say, I would have been a great general. And then he said, I think.
Just too bad for the bone spurs, you know, but for that, if it weren't for the bone spurs. But, you know, the fact is, for a great share of the American people, that is those people who watch Fox, which once again in 2018 was the number one cable channel ahead of even ESPN, both daytime and nighttime. So for those people who watch Fox, they don't have a sense that he's, what was the word you used?
Megalomaniacal.
Yeah, that he's that or that he's not telling the truth. They have great confidence in him.
And by the way, MSNBC has now in recent ratings periods surpassed Fox. So in the key demographic, Monday through Friday. Well, that's the one that they measure primarily for advertisers' sake. And MSNBC has now the number one weekday, weeknight cable channel.
But I do think that Rex's point is correct. It may be for the advertisers, MSNBC is their number one potential. But I think in terms of bodies watching, voters watching, it's kind of alarming that the raw data indicates that Fox is on top.
There was a poll recently talking about how people get their news and that most people still get their news from television. And I didn't dig down deep enough into that study, I don't know if you gentlemen did, to find out when they say watching news on television, whether they're talking about mainstream media news, legitimate news,
or opinion news,
MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, which are not always
news. You know, that is interesting. People consider it to be news, even though what they're just watching is opinion. They believe that they're getting news from Sean Hannity, when in fact what they're getting is opinion.
And I've often said, I think I've said it here, that the cable networks are willingly doing a disservice to the public by not labeling on the screen when they are doing opinion shows, opinion, much like newspapers on the top of their opinion pages have the word opinion or commentary. And so it's easy for people who are not bright enough to know otherwise to think that some of the cable commentary is news.
Well, it's so blurred. How are you supposed to know? And CNN, which is supposed to be news, is clearly slanted news.
Well,
I happen to agree with it a lot of the times, but it's not,
I don't believe their news is slanted, but they have quite a number of opinion panels, and those panels are not labeled on the screen opinion.
Well, legitimacy is in the eyes of the beholder.
Because they're bringing so-called experts, all the stations, they're bringing in their talking heads to expound, supposedly to enlighten the viewers, but from the point of view of whatever that station is trying to get across.
We've just been treated to a full-page spread in the New York Post and other places by one Jill Abramson, used to be for a short while, relatively short while, the executive editor at the New York Times. And different people who have analyzed the book have just said different things. The Post has taken the position, whoever writes that stuff for them, that it's an explosive expose on how bad the Times is and how the Times, to get back to this original point, how the Times, for example, on Trump has been, you know, just blatantly opinionated as opposed to news factual gathering.
But just to clarify for the people who may not be aware, Jill Abramson didn't write the story that was in the Post.
That's right.
Jill Abramson has written a book, and the Post was reporting on excerpts from the book, which were particularly negative to the New York Times, taking it and running with it.
Well, I thought that's what I said.
No,
it's not.
You didn't. But,
so thanks for clarifying.
Thank you for clarifying. Go ahead.
But the point is, there are other reports out there also analyzing this book that are pointing out that very many of Abramson's comments about the New York Times were favorable. And as is often the case with books, the most controversial excerpts are brought out there, sometimes by the publisher themselves because they want to help sell the books. And sometimes, in the case, I would guess, of the New York Post, they would take great glee in finding negative things to report about the New York Times.
Abramson wrote this. I mean, she can't have it both ways. She can't write critically of her successor as editor, Dean Baquet, and how the Times has behaved since she left, and not expect that it's going to be quoted by the Times opponents, including the non-credible New York Post. as being critical. What she wrote was, though Baquet, that is the editor, Dean Baquet, though Baquet said publicly he didn't want the Times to be the opposition party, his news pages were unmistakably anti-Trump. Some headlines contained raw opinion, as did some of the stories that were labeled as news analysis. So she is being critical of the Times, though then she says that she really believes that the Times is doing its job. And her point is, how do you, and I think this is a good question for us, how can you, as this legitimate news organization, behave when you are charged with truth-telling and you have a president who doesn't share that responsibility? WAMC is clearly anti-Trump, the same way that the New York Times is, because you believe in truth-telling. And the president does not. How can you be otherwise?
Well, Abramson also said that the Times has maintained its quality, that the news report as a whole has never been stronger, that the route back to improved financial health turned about it to be its most traditional strength, great reporting. I don't know that that's reported in today's Post story.
Right.
There's some things that have to be considered, looked at in a much more subtle way at times, whether it's the New York Times or our local newspapers, and it's the choice of a verb in a headline or a verb in a story.
Give us an example.
Charged as opposed to said.
Right.
When you have a less neutral term.
Right. If you're doing an international
claimed.
Story, is it right? Claimed is a good one. I try to tell my students claimed carries with it an element of doubt.
Yeah, sure.
When said just says said. If you're talking about the insurgents or the rebels.
Or
anti-abortion or pro-life or pro-choice.
Or how about if somebody is arrested in Moscow for spying? And the American media has largely refused to deal with the fact that the guy might have done it, that he might have been a spy. Now, We know that everybody who runs for office says we need more assets on the ground. What do you think they're talking about? They're talking about spies. And so this guy gets arrested. And when I mentioned that on the air here on WAMC, I got a letter, took my skin off, and basically said, how dare you say that somebody was spying, you know, basically for the United States? Well, I wasn't saying it. I was questioning it.
Well, yeah. You can certainly report that he was accused of spying, and you have to be careful not to assume that he has been wrongly accused. But you also, I think, have to take this administration to task when their response to it isn't, we're going to get to the bottom of it. It's, we'll take appropriate action when we find out more about
That's right.
it. That was disturbing.
But
yeah,
if I understand you correctly, Alan, you're taking the media writ large to task for not reporting the fact that...
Or for not questioning
so
the fact.
And yeah. What would be that motivation? I mean, I would think that most Americans, regardless of political bent, would expect that we have spies there and, in fact, are pleased that we have spies there.
Well, no, I don't agree with you, Ira, but that's not unusual.
Well, why not, really?
I think, in fact, most Americans think that if somebody was arrested in Russia, that they were probably wrongly arrested.
Well, that could be.
And not that there's a presumption that we have spies there and this guy could have been one. And I think it is open, and I loved what I just heard from the professor who said, you know what, when our people are saying we want to get to the bottom of this and see what's really going on, that implies that maybe something's going on that ain't so good.
Boy, I don't know. American culture has been raised on spies, and the spies are heroes, whether it's the British spy James Bond or his American counterpart Felix Leiter. I mean, Jack Ryan and I think Americans would be angry at their government if they did not have spies out.
Oh, come on.
I don't know what this may have to do with the media project.
Well, because it's the way the media plays it. That's what's important. And, you know, for media that are very concerned with their own investigative possibilities, not to at least raise. Now, I know NPR, there was one question that was raised on this, but in fact, for the most part, it's too dangerous. Just too dangerous to imply, it's almost anti-American to imply our guy who got arrested over there may have been spying himself.
Well, I don't know. I agree with you that there is some sort of an implicit bias in the way that the stories are presented on this. On NPR, there was an interview with the American reporter who was basically held hostage by the Russians years ago in the 1980s and then was the subject of a trade. I'm having trouble remembering. Nick Daniloff.
Sure.
NPR did an interview with the guy basically saying, and so this is kind of the same thing that's going on right now. It may not be the case. You know, Daniloff was a reporter who was improperly charged with spying, but he did get swapped for somebody who America had charged with spying. So I think you're right, Alan. I agree that there is a sort of an assumption that we've seen in the way the stories are being played, that this American must be a poor innocent, and he may in fact be a spy.
But we have to be careful about what path we're going down, and there are countries that are arresting journalists and calling them spies.
Yeah.
And maybe they are spies, but we think they probably are not spies.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we present that in
right.
the media?
But you really touched on something very important here, which is whether or not reporters should ever be spies. In other words...
Absolutely not. The answer
That's
to that
right.
question.
Your and, answer would be absolutely not.
Well,
that
and I don't correct. Know any. I don't know any news organization that would tolerate that.
If How
I
would
think
they
any
know?
News organization finds out that their reporter is doing active work for the government, yeah. I think that person would lose their job, because it imperils every reporter. It imperils journalism. And actually, you know, a lot of intelligence gathering is using publicly available sources, including journalism. So. But that's the difficulty. If people think that journalists are spies, then every one of them is subject to being seized and arrested in these countries where reporting is very dangerous in any case.
First of all, I agree with you. But on the other hand, you have to take it a little bit differently. What if, in fact, the subject were so serious that we're talking about the release of a new bomb, and the CIA has recruited a reporter to go get that information and appeals to the reporter's sense of Americanism, protecting the country? I think that that reporter would justify what he or she was doing based on the fact that it was a so momentous situation.
You think that the reporter would then have to do it to be patriotic? Is that what you're
saying? I'm not saying that. I'm just simply saying I think the reporter would think that.
I don't think so. And I don't believe the CIA does that. I don't think that they try to recruit journalists.
Well, how will you know?
I may be wrong. Yeah, but
I wouldn't be surprised if they do, and I wouldn't be surprised that there may be a journalist somewhere who's based in a foreign land, although less so because there are a lot of journalists who they can no longer afford to send to foreign lands. But I just am having a hard time agreeing with you saying Americans would be shocked to learn that somebody is a spy. I think the only reason they'd be shocked to learn that somebody is a spy is because they're not supposed to be uncovered. But the fact that they're out there, I think we all presume that America has spies. And I think where Americans get upset is if they find out they're spying domestically against the fellow citizens.
That would be a problem. So this is the Media Project. If you're just tuning us in, you don't know who you're talking to. That was Ira Fussfeld. Barbara Lombardo is here. Alan Shartok, and I'm Rex Smith of the Times Union. So we are telling you, actually, Barbara alluded earlier to this new poll that checks how people get their news. The question is, whether online or offline, do you prefer to get your news by watching it, reading it, or listening to it? In 2018, virtually unchanged from 2016, 47% would prefer to watch the news, 34% would prefer to read it, and 19% would prefer to listen to it. So that just gives you a sense of viewing is still the preferred method for getting the news, and news watchers still prefer to use television to get their news, not the web. That is, those who want to watch rather than read or hear it, still 75% want it on television and as opposed to online. So while we are making a lot of paying a lot of attention to the rise of digital as the platform of the future, let's still bear in mind that the platform that is still dominant in news is television.
But the other part that I thought was interesting and maybe not surprising was that of the 35% or so that are readers of the news, they are overwhelmingly digital readers of news,
yeah.
not print readers of news.
That's what's going
that
on.
That should be a wake-up call to businesses in case they haven't looked at their bottom line lately.
Right.
Well, the other thing is, how can we trust the reporting, the self-reporting, that people what they prefer? I mean, you know, we do know that many too many Americans don't know squat about what's going on in this world. So if you ask them a question, where do you prefer to get your news? And they tell you on the television as opposed to, you know, online or something else. And then you find out that there's an appalling amount of ignorance in the country about anything. One wonders about the appropriateness of this particular study.
Yeah. You never know, I think, in polling whether somebody is lying to you. That's, of course, what used to be referred to in polling as the Bradley effect, when in California, the assumption
sure.
was that Tom Bradley, the mayor of Los Angeles, is going to be elected governor.
Who happened to be black.
Yes. And the thought was that voters lied about who they were going to support because they didn't want to be perceived by the pollster as racist.
Sure.
Interesting question.
Sure. I also have a lot of doubts about polls in these recent days. Just who is answering the polls? Who are you reaching on by telephone to talk to on a poll? I do not respond to polls.
So when he calls and says, I'm doing survey research,
don't even get that far into the conversation, because if I don't recognize the ID, yeah. I don't answer the phone.
Me too. I don't answer the phone at home anymore.
And you don't even know who the pollster is and who they're representing.
Right. So there are occasions when in a weak moment I answer the phone and they want to ask questions for a survey. I do not do that. I don't know if it's legitimate. I don't know who it's for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now let me ask you one more thing about that poll. If we take it at face value, most people get their news from TV. Many people are getting their news from digital, whether that's whatever newspaper, digital, etc. Does all of that not suggest that this is one of the reasons why Americans are not as well informed as they used to be? I mean, and this is not a knock on the TV business, nor is it a knock on digital newspapers. But the fact is, the coverage tends to be more superficial in those places. And as it relates to digital print kind of stories, the likelihood of somebody sitting there on their iPhone and reading a 14-inch story all the way through is relatively slim. So they're only getting the headlines or the pictures and the headlines on TV.
Do you think that it is necessarily true that Americans are not as well informed as they used to be?
Well, I think that we could probably make a case that they're more informed on a more superficial level, because they know the headlines. If something happens in Albany at noontime, people in Albany know about it at 5 afternoon because they're looking at their phones all day. But I don't know that they're necessarily going to read the 22-inch story that you have all the way through the next day.
I happen to want to take a different tack with Rex's very good question. The answer is yes. I think that Americans are less informed than they've ever been. You may have access on your phone. You may be able to watch the TV. You may watch CNN, quote, breaking news, or MSNBC. But I go around, I talk to an awful lot of people who don't know anything about anything. It's extraordinary.
I certainly think that's true. I just
but I
wonder
don't know if
that
any
was
less,
the
right?
case. Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting question, Rex, because I don't have my hands on the data that would tell me, people any less informed than they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Oh, so you want data?
That I won't believe anyway.
There's another way to look at this.
There's a lot of anecdotal evidence.
My father did not graduate from high school, yet he read 4 newspapers every single day, mm-hmm. and he could tell you anything that's going on. Now, as my old mentor at NYU, where did my doctorate, used to say to me, there's an old Yiddish expression, which is, for example, stinks. And so it may well be that I'm taking one person, but this man read all of these newspapers and could tell you any of the nuances. I don't see that anymore.
So what can you do? You know, I've seen these video presentations of questioning college students. I remember seeing one a few months ago at Texas A&M,
right.
with all due respect to the Aggies, where the students didn't know who the vice president was, couldn't name a single member of the United States Senate, really had no idea what century the Civil War was fought in. This is terrifying. These are college students. So what can you do about the ignorance then of the American people?
Well, one of the things you can do is no longer televise without editing the Trump conferences where he's expounding on history using, to put it graciously, alternate facts. And if you didn't know anything about Russia and Afghanistan and you listened to him, after all, he's the president of the United States, he must know what he's talking about. There are millions of people now who see that conflict entirely differently.
I don't know,
and incorrectly.
Ira. I don't know, Ira. I know we're out of time, but all I know is that I hear them all the time, both on CNN and MSNBC, saying the president didn't tell the truth.
Well, and this is a factual statement we can make at the end of the show, that Glenn Kessler of The Washington Post, his end-of-the-year count, Trump averaged 15 false statements a day in 2018. 15 false. So if Ira is right that people listening to the president and believing him, not good.
Well, how else do you explain his support?
There you go. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok, Barbara Lombardo, and Rex Smith. We thank you for joining us this week as we do our part for American democracy by truth-telling on The Media Project.
It's the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the bill. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained
Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.